I'll like joke and say that my higher self is wearing this like flowy sundress, but also a leather jacket, and she's like smoking a cig. Like she's so okay with being a human, and she's so okay with making mistakes. And so I think that that's just important, and I'm glad that we were able to kind of share a little bit more about, you know, what does it mean to live in alignment? It's this connection to self that is so pure and out of such love and out of such acceptance that you don't have to move through your day feeling resistance to everything that comes up. Hello, hello, my friends, or should I say our friends, and welcome to the first official week of The Real With Method. We are so excited to finally be sitting down and getting into the goods. We're getting into some of the more juicy topics in week one. We're going to be talking about clarity, mindfulness, choosing yourself, the power of investment, and we're only going to really just expand from there as we continue on throughout this program. But before we dive in, before we begin, I want to set an intention for this journey. Me and Elizabeth both want to, of course, teach you and guide you, motivate you and inspire you. But more than anything, we want to show you the power that comes from choosing yourself and investing in yourself. And we want you to have tangible proof in your life by the end of these 8 weeks. And I'm not usually someone who markets and sells programs with empty promises. I think everyone's journey is always so unique, but I kind of want to guarantee in a way that by the end of this journey, you will have that proof in your life. I honestly believe that you can start to feel the shifts and see the proof within the first few days or at least the first week, but that might just be the optimistic Sagittarius in me. But it's also because I've done this so many times, because I've lived this and I've breathed this for years. And Elizabeth and I both want to make it so clear that the reason the Real With Method is here now is because we both need it too. This is actually Elizabeth's first time going through a program with me, I guess you could say, even though I ran the Real With Project round after round after round for years. Yes, she was my sister. Yes, she was helping with so much of the branding and the creative design, but she never actually went through the program and got a taste of the content. And so as we talked about in the intro episode, so if you guys have not listened to the Real With Method intro episode, it's very short, it's very sweet. I highly recommend you go back and listen to that before you dive into the week one episode, this episode. The Real With Project is what birthed the Real With Method. I guess you could say the Real With Project is like the mother to the Real With Method.
Mm-hmm.
The Real With Project was the first ever group program that I created to help women step into alignment with their most authentic selves. When we are living in alignment with our authenticity, we are most magnetic. We are connected to our self-worth. And that's when really powerful things start to happen. That's when we start to see really great shifts in our lives, physically, emotionally, spiritually, mentally, in all dimensions. You know, I think something I heard on a podcast recently was just talking about the three dimensions and how we live in a 3D world, but it kind of represents the physical plane, the mental plane, and the spiritual plane. And so we can see positive change in all of those planes, I guess you could say, when we commit to this sort of work. So as I was saying, this is Elizabeth's first time going through a program with me. So do you want to say anything before we start to dive in and get started?
Absolutely. I want to speak to the people who, like me, have never subscribed to a larger mentorship experience or any type of coaching program, because the reason that I never did was I just felt like they were selling me empty promises. Like Emma said, it just felt very cold and removed, and like I just tripped into their sales funnel and they didn't actually care about me. They didn't care about my results and they just wanted to add me to some list. That is the opposite of what this is. As you can see, this program is free. And we are walking through this program step by step, hand in hand, beside you. We are going through every single week with you. We are going through the trials and the tribulations, addressing our challenges, addressing the shadows that come up, and we are experiencing the healing and expansion in real time alongside you. So I have never been through this program, just like Emma said. So I am prepared to be challenged. I am prepared to be shocked. I am prepared to heal and expand and fall in love with myself all over again, right with you. So I could not be more excited to be a part of this. And I'm so grateful that all of you guys are tuning in.
Yes. And I think I just want to shine a light on one thing that Elizabeth said, and it's that this is free to our community. Yes, there were two opportunities to invest to have a more, I guess you could say, hands-on experience with me. There's both the Real With Method group coaching program, which is a very intimate and limited spots. And then we're also offering the Real With Method live group coaching. And if you are listening to this episode during week one, there is still an opportunity for you to join that. There are 4 bi-weekly calls. But again, I talk about all of this in the intro episode. And that's also an important episode for you to listen to because it also breaks down the Real With Method Alignment Guidebook. And I know that that is such a mouthful, but like we've said before, words cast spells, and how we relate to words, it matters. And so the reason that it's called an alignment guidebook is because it was crafted in such a way that you will be able to go to that guidebook, not only for, you know, the tips and the tricks and the hacks that we talk about throughout this experience, but also to get the prompts, to get the assignments so that you are doing the embodiment work. It's really not enough to just sit and listen to something and you're like, oh, wow, like that makes sense. That was really motivational. Oh, that was illuminating for me. Or you feel like you had like a little aha revelation moment. That's not enough. Kind of similar to talking about the 3D, we live in the third dimension. You can't just do the mental stuff. You also have to bring it into the physical. And so journaling, being with a physical guidebook, I highly recommend, we mentioned this in the intro episode, maybe printing it out for yourself so that you actually have it to work on throughout this 8-week experience, bringing in the spiritual aspect as well. That's embodiment. It's the body, the mind, and the soul. So now that we've kind of covered our bases there, we're going to dive into topic for this week or the topics for this week. We're going to be starting this journey focusing on our why, finding clarity around our why. So why are you listening? If you invested in one of the more hands-on experiences, why did you invest in them? Why now? For me and Elizabeth, we can sit here and we can say, why did we choose to even make the Real With Method? Why did we make it free? Why are we doing it to start the year 2024 when usually me and Elizabeth hate New Year's intentions and New Year's resolutions? We're like, ah, bullshit. Like, you know, January isn't even that great of a month to start something new. Why now? And for all of you who are listening, you can start to reflect and ask yourself, what are your goals? What do you want? What do you need? What do you desire? And why do you want, need, and desire those things? And the reason why finding clarity is so important is because when we have clarity, it allows us to then align our thoughts, choices, actions, and behaviors with our goals, with who we want to be. But the most important reason why we're kind of sitting here, we're having this conversation, I'm asking you to reflect and to get clear on your why, is because it will show you whether or not you are coming at this experience from a place of love or from fear. And the reason why that is so crucial is because we have seen firsthand, Elizabeth and myself, and I'm sure you, that when you start something, whether it's a weight loss journey, or I think, you know, we're seeing a lot on social media about just becoming that girl, becoming your higher self, or a healing journey, or maybe there's a very specific goal that you want to hit in terms of your personal life or your career, you're trying to call in a relationship. So many of us have approached a journey out of fear, and we do that subconsciously. It's not really an active choice, which is why right now we're sitting here, we're having this conversation. we're bringing consciousness into the equation. Because when you are aware, you have more opportunity to choose better things for yourself. And as I was saying, so many of us have started journeys out of fear. I know myself, almost every single weight loss journey that I was on, or I should say, any journey that I was on to improve my self-image, to improve my physical body, up until the age of 25, I'm about to turn 30. I am 30 when you're listening to this, actually. I approached it from a place of fear. And the reason that I did that, and the reason that so many of you can probably relate to it, is because we were taught to use fear as our motivator. From a young age, I know that all of the media, all of the things that I was seeing on TV shows, even the, you know, first ever fitness influencers and food blogs and calorie counting, macro counting accounts, they were teaching you to use fear as your fuel, fear as your battery pack. What's going to make you show up and count your calories? What's going to make you show up and hit the gym? What's going to make you show up and straighten your hair or curl your hair or put your makeup on or invest in beauty products? It was all fear-based. It was all, you're not going to be good enough if you don't do this. And I think the one thing everyone can relate on is this idea of success, whether we're thinking of success in career, business, personal life, you know, something very specific to that you're trying to achieve success in. We all were taught that in order to succeed, we must suffer and sacrifice and compromise. And so inherently, so many of us kind of grasp fear and use it to motivate us because it's what we were taught. It's what we see everybody else doing. And I think what I can say to that, and I'm going to turn it over to Elizabeth to elaborate because I know she has some very personal stories herself, is that any time that I began a journey out of fear, I would achieve the goal that I wanted. You know, I look back on pictures of myself when I was, you know, in my early 20s and I was going to the gym for hours every day and counting every calorie that I ate and my macros and taking the body image progress photos. I would actually hit my goals, but I was never satisfied. So fear can get you where you want to go, but fear does not make you feel the way that you want to feel. And so in order to achieve that feeling of success or satisfaction or peace or joy, you have to start from a place of love.
And starting from a place of love can feel so fucking uncomfortable because it's so new and such an unusual feeling when you've lived your whole life driven by fear. I can remember embarking on that 30 minutes a day BBG fitness program when I was in high school. And I so desperately wanted to be skinny because if I was skinny, I would be considered pretty. And if I was considered pretty, I would be considered desirable. And if I was desirable, people would like me better and da 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 whatever. My brain and my spirit and all of the other things that were non-physical didn't fucking matter at all. But what I did was I forced myself into those 30-minute workouts every day. And I know that 30 minutes isn't that long. I now happily will work out even longer than 60 minutes a day and feel so much more empowered and so much more in my body than I ever did in those 30-minute workouts where every single second of every minute I was shaming myself. I was berating myself with insults. I was so guilty. I was so just contracted the entire time, just cursing the woman who designed these programs because I had seen the befores and afters. I stalked her Instagram page for weeks before I committed to that. And I was like, well, there's so many women who are skinny now. Why can't I be fucking skinny? I'm trying so hard. And I remember when I finally spiritually awoke for the first time my senior year in college, I have never looked better than that immediate year following. I was doing Pilates for an hour to an hour and a half a day. I felt so empowered. I was lifting in the gym. I literally had fucking abs, like unheard of for me. I literally have nicknames for my stomach from growing up because me and my stomach were just literally at fucking odds. But during that year, I really started to appreciate my body and approach my body and the way that I moved her with so much love. And it was staggering the change that I was able to experience from just changing my perspective from fear to love.
Yeah. And we actually have an entire week that we're going to be breaking down food and fitness and self-care and all the ways that we are like physically showing up for ourselves. But just going off of what Elizabeth shared, I had the same exact experience when I started living a mindful life, when I was connected to myself and when I was moving through my world, making decisions and choices out of love instead of out of fear. I noticed immediate radical change. And I would say, unlike Elizabeth, almost opposite to her, she kind of had this self-limiting belief that like, I'm not an athlete, so I don't work out. And if I do work out, I need to make it like short because I probably can't do more. Whereas I was the opposite. I was trying to cut down how long I was working out. I used to work out for 2 hours, 3 hours a day. And so for me, the proof was in the pudding when I lowered the minutes that I worked out, when I lowered the intensity, and when I started doing 30-minute yoga or Pilates, and I started just walking on the treadmill or going out into nature for a walk. And my body changed in drastic ways because I was focused on loving it and nourishing it. And I think if you can take one thing away from Elizabeth and I both sharing our experiences, the physical transformation that we saw with our body is, number one, that it started with our mind. It started with coming at the journey from maybe a completely new perspective. And Elizabeth actually touched on this. So many people are afraid to begin out of love for themselves because it doesn't feel safe. You weren't taught that you can succeed out of love. We were all taught that we only succeed when we suffer and we use guilt and shame and judgment to fuel our ability to show up for ourselves and to motivate us to get things done. But also number two, that when you come from a place of love, the satisfaction is always there. That's almost a constant. When you learn to love and accept your body where it's at, no matter where you are on that journey, you're 1 day in, you're a week in, you're 3 months in, you're 7 months in, that feeling of satisfaction to your body and who you are and the journey and how you're showing up, that remains. And then being satisfied and at peace with yourself is actually a very powerful motivator. Knowing that you're going to feel empowered, knowing you're going to feel strong, knowing that by investing in yourself, you are going to radically change your life. That is what allows you to keep going. So I'd say for anyone listening who's like, I'm kind of scared because I've never been able to achieve anything by doing it in a loving way, use that as an example or use that maybe as an expander for you.
And for anybody that's ever been in an environment that is highly competitive, so for all of the athletes out there, I can't relate. I'm not a competitive person, but I know that that's a huge driving factor for people to succeed in sports. It's, I need to be better than the person next to me. I need to be faster. I need to be stronger. I need to just do everything better than them to be valued, to be worthy. And I think that's a major reason why I never really resonated with sports and the mentality of like, if you're not puking, you're doing it wrong. Like for the, you know, doing sprints and running the mile and things like that. I just never resonated with always trying to beat the person next to me. I was like, you can win. Like, I just want to be here. I just want to be involved. And that was it. So for those people who resonate more with that competition and that competitive side, consider competing against the version of yourself from the past, and not in a way that's you need to win over them or they're bad or they're shameful, but just always trying to be a little bit kinder, a little bit more loving, a little bit more intentional. And you're not trying to beat them out of the race. You're trying to just like adopt this more awakened, more enlightened, more aligned version of yourself. And that's the improvement and that's the competition that you can really embark on.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I'm sure we'll touch on this as we move forward in the program. Competitiveness is something that I've had to heal, but I can't heal away because being competitive has gotten me to so many amazing places. And this is something Casey actually really shines a light on for me. Because there are times where I'm like, oh, I hate that I'm so competitive, or I hate that I have these jealous tendencies, or I hate that I, you know, look at other people and compare myself to them and feel like I'm either not good enough or need to be better or whatever. And Casey's like, there's a way where you can channel your competitiveness into grit. And he's like, being gritty is a gift, and not everybody has that gift. Not everyone is willing to push themselves to get things done. And there is a sense of pride and reward in that. And as someone who was a Division I athlete, yeah, there were times where even though I would show up to the workout out of fear, there was this really beautiful sense of accomplishment when I was able to like do the hill sprints or do the timed mile and, you know, knock some seconds off of my record or whatever it was. But unfortunately, it wasn't long lasting, you know, like that sense of pride would be kind of glazed over by me being like, okay, now I need to get better again. So this actually is a perfect segue into the second topic of week one, which is mindfulness. But before we get there, we want to refer you guys to your guidebook for just a moment. So if you are listening to this while you're driving, do not open your guidebook. Do not look anywhere other than the road and where you're going. I know a lot of people are probably listening to this while they're doing other things. The reason that we're referring you to your guidebook is because there is a section under week one where you are going to answer some journal prompts. And the reason that you're going to answer these is so that you can really solidify why you're here, why you're listening, why now, where you're starting from, and where it is that you want to go. And we are going to refer back to these journaling prompts as we move forward in the program. It's going to be very cool to see how your mindset changes week after week. So whether you want to do it now or you want to do it after this episode ends or do it another time today or this week, you are going to go into the guidebook and answer the journaling prompts under week one. And it's going to be in the clarity section.
And as we mentioned in the introductory episode, take these journal prompts and reflect on them in whatever way feels comfortable for you. If one day you feel like sitting down with a pen and paper and putting your thoughts down, go for it. If another day you'd prefer to go on a walk and speak these prompts aloud and really get that flow, that channeling of inner reflection going. I personally prefer to verbally process, but sometimes it really feels good to get things down on paper. So this is really just an invitation to reflect in a way that makes you feel expanded and comfortable and seen, and there's no pressure here.
Right. But I just, little asterisk, if you are saying the answers to these prompts aloud, record yourself. Record yourself so that you can look back or listen back, I should say. It's just powerful. It's one of those things, like I mentioned before, where you are showing up and doing something physical to help with that integration and embodiment process. So now that we have our clarity and we have set some intentions, it's time to really dive into the work. And I know that you're listening, so you can't see me, but I'm putting up air quotes. The work is what we do on a daily basis to maintain that feeling of alignment. And alignment, I know, is a buzzword. I know that we're hearing it all the time and we're seeing it all the time. I'm going to share what alignment means to me. And then Elizabeth, you can jump in and share if there's anything else that maybe comes to mind when you think of alignment. But to me, living in alignment is living in your truth. It's being willing to be open to all experiences, all feelings, all things that are coming up and that are rising to the surface. And it's being willing, I guess you could say, it's having the courage to live that truth. So living in alignment is when you're deeply in your self-worth. Yes. You feel so connected to your worth that you're not constantly in the like fight or flight, scared to pay attention to your thoughts, scared to speak your truth, scared to, you know, choose yourself and act out of love. So to me, alignment's very multifaceted, but it to me comes down to being authentic, being in integrity, and being really rooted in your worth.
I definitely agree with the being in your integrity piece. I think for me, alignment is being in integrity with that. And again, I know that the highest self is one of those buzzwords that's going around a lot, but When I envision my highest self, I envision someone who is grounded in who she is, what she stands for, her beliefs, her knowledge, her wisdom. And she doesn't have to bend over backwards and bend herself into a pretzel to get people to understand her. She doesn't have to overtalk people. She doesn't have to trauma dump. She doesn't have to seek validation. She just is. And she can just be who she is at whatever level that feels comfortable. And she's not always trying to be something else for someone else. It's just her truth.
I love that. I always tell my clients when we think about our higher self or our highest self, it's not always going to be this like ethereal fairy, you know, woman. If you're listening, I'm assuming, I know that my community is primarily women. So that's what I'm saying. And all of my clients are women. But like my highest self, when I actually connect to her, she's way more grounded and chill than that. My highest self is not the epitome of perfection. My highest self is completely okay and satisfied with everything that is. She knows that she has flaws. She knows that she could be better in all these areas. She knows that she could make more money or have more this or look that way, but she just doesn't let it affect who she is and how she expresses herself. And so, yeah, I agree. I think I used to talk a lot about living in alignment with your higher self, but I think it really painted this image of your highest self is this best self, perfect self, never makes a mistake self, is so wise, knows everything. And that's not what it's about. I mean, I guess you could say your highest self is your wisest self, but people who are wise, they're wise because they've lived and they've learned and they've made mistakes and they know that that's the point of this human experience.
Yes. And I think of so many adults that when I envision them, when I think of them in their fullest expression of self, they can still be that silly, eccentric, wearing crazy colors, wearing wacky clothes or whatever, because they just, they own it and they're unapologetic and they're bold and they're fierce and they're strong. So your highest self or your best self, it doesn't have to be muted and whispered and not, you know, taking up any space. Like, she's proud to take up fucking space. She says what she wants. She's unapologetic in her beliefs. She fucking is all of her and she doesn't have to mute. That's what it is. Yeah. She doesn't have to mute or leave any parts of herself at the door because she is fully accepted in her fullness.
Yeah. I'll like joke and say that my higher self is wearing this like flowy sundress, but also a leather jacket. And she's like smoking a cig. Like she's so okay with being a human and she's so okay with making mistakes. And so I think that that's just important. And I'm glad that we were able to kind of share a little bit more about, you know, what does it mean to live in alignment? It's this connection to self that is so pure and out of such love and out of such acceptance that you don't have to move through your day feeling resistance to everything that comes up, feeling resistance to what you're eating, how you're moving, your job, your career, your body, your emotions, etc.
And you're not living in alignment. I want to note this. You're not living in alignment with someone else's definition of perfection or of wellness or of health. It's not, I'm living in alignment because I'm drinking a green juice every day and I'm gua sha-ing and I'm working out and I'm meditating and I'm this and I'm that. It's what is alignment for you? Because your alignment looks way the fuck different than my alignment. So really using that discernment and getting clear on your authenticity so that that's what you're aligning with.
Yes. Beautiful. I love that. So one of the things that we are going to really be highlighting this week, I guess this is almost like the last thing. Today's topic was meant to be like short, sweet, to the point. We're talking about clarity, setting intentions. And then the big, big, big focus of this week is mindfulness. Mindfulness is a way of being that has the power to change everything for you. Now we're going to talk about the textbook definition and, you know, how mindfulness is used as a therapeutic technique. That's all well and good. But when we take the idea and the concept of mindfulness and what it can do for us, instead of just letting it be something that we ebb in and out of, or we choose to be mindful for a moment, when you make mindfulness your primary state of being, that is when things will literally change drastically,
quickly. Everything will just begin to unfold for you. And we're going to get into how and why in just a bit. But I want to kind of give you guys the classical definition of mindfulness, just for anyone who's listening who maybe has never heard of mindfulness. Now, this is the first thing that introduced me to healing through a lens of love. This was back in 2018, 2019. And I would say this was like my intro to spirituality. So I was not spiritual when I began to live a mindful life. So for anyone who is maybe beginning the Real With method, who doesn't feel like they have this deep connection to the universe and source, do not worry about that. We're hopefully going to be holding your hand and guiding you down a journey to, you know, maybe exploring your spirituality a little bit more. But mindfulness actually has nothing to do with your quote unquote spirituality. The definition of mindfulness is the quality or state of being conscious or aware of something. It is a mental state achieved by focusing one's attention and awareness on the present moment while calmly acknowledging and accepting one's feelings, thoughts, and bodily sensations. So I'm just going to let that, sit for a little bit. Okay. Because the biggest takeaway, I would say, from that definition is that you are calmly accepting through your awareness. So you are, whenever I talk about mindfulness, I know that I got this from Esther Hicks, Abraham Hicks. She always is like, tap in, tune in. She says, turn on. Turn on doesn't really resonate with me. But to me, mindfulness, it's being aware. It's tapping in and tuning in. What am I thinking? How am I feeling? What's coming up? But the key to mindfulness is doing it without judgment. And so in the literal textbook definition, it talks about accepting your thoughts, your feelings, and your bodily sensations. It's just being like, oh, I'm feeling anxious, or I'm feeling scared, or I have a pit in my stomach, or I'm feeling uncomfortable. I'm feeling like I'm at a crossroads. I'm feeling like I need to people please. And through mindfulness, this is where my favorite kind of mantra and catchphrase comes in. Mindfulness is the catalyst for change, because you cannot change what you don't know. And so a lot of people who want to start healing or manifesting or just improving their life, you have to incorporate mindful practices first to then lead a mindful life and be in a mindful state of being. Because if you are not aware of what you're thinking and how you're feeling, you aren't being given the opportunity to choose what is aligned with your goals, your dreams, what you want to cultivate and who you want to be. So mindfulness creates opportunity. So at any given moment, you tap in, you tune in, you realize maybe you're making yourself breakfast in the morning and you're like, oh my God, like, I have a leftover donut from yesterday or from the weekend, but I feel like I should make a smoothie or, you know, something healthier, right? Mindfulness is going to give you the opportunity to be aware of that internal debate. It's going to shine a light on the fact that you are being challenged to make a decision. It's just what you're eating for breakfast, but everything we do during our day, every choice we make, there's an intention behind it. So whether it's this example of breakfast, whether it's your, you know, are you going to put on mascara today or not? There's a reason why we do things or why we don't do things. And so mindfulness allows you to drop in and choose to do whatever you're going to do out of love. So you can have the donut out of love, or you could have the donut out of fear. You could have the smoothie out of love, or you could have the smoothie out of fear. You could put mascara on out of love, or you could put mascara on out of fear. And this goes back to what we were talking about under, you know, the clarity portion of this episode, where so many of us were just taught our like automatic default setting is to make all decisions out of fear, out of lack, out of shame, out of judgment, and out of scarcity. So in order to change your life, you have to change your habits, your beliefs, your behaviors, your perspectives, And all of those things begin with your thoughts, choices, and action.
This brings me back to when I first ever learned about mindfulness. And this was very early in the awakening process. And once I became self-aware of my inner dialogue, it was like all hell broke loose. Mm-hmm. I could not even fathom how much negativity I was circulating in my own brain. And then upon reflecting in my own brain, I was realizing how much negativity I was also projecting onto others and how much I was sharing all of my negative thoughts and my experiences. And I was just living in this whirlwind of just like clusterfuckery of negative things. And it's really daunting at first to think like, okay, Jesus Christ, like every thought that I have is fucking negative. But because I was aware of these negative thoughts, that gave me the permission to just kind of look at it and not say, all right, like I'm a piece of shit because I'm having a negative thought. It's okay. I just had a negative thought. Is that thought going to predict the rest of my day? Or am I going to, as Emma always says, choose again, choose love? Am I going to really succumb to the fear and the anxiety and the pressure and the guilt and the shame that I've been living on repeat? Like we think this, what is it, like 90% of the thoughts we think today, we thought yesterday or something crazy like that. So if you're thinking I'm a piece of shit every single day, you might think it again tomorrow. But at least when you hear that come through your mind, you're not going to believe it. Or you can start to practice not believing it and not judging yourself for it.
Yeah. So what Elizabeth is talking about, we are really going to dive into next week, where we're talking about the power of thought. And now that you're living mindfully, like what's next? Because as she just shared, and this is a little side note here, this is why the Real With Project was an intimate group program, is because I can sit here and give you a textbook definition and be like, oh, and like, here's why it's important. But how you relate to the information is what creates change. And listening to how someone else relates to the information makes you relate in a deeper way and resonate in a different way. And so for anyone who is part of the live coaching or who is in the Real With Method group coaching program, this is what we're going to be doing. We're going to be having really expansive conversations on this week's episode, right? Because there's so much more to explore. And so I want to kind of tie this back to Elizabeth just sharing how overwhelmed she was when she first became mindful. I'll never forget when I basically sat Casey down and was like, yo, so like mindfulness is kind of changing my life. And I think you should start being mindful too. And I started having all these new conversations with myself. Therefore, I was having new conversations with Casey because I'm just a chatty Cathy. And Casey would just be like, I don't understand. Like, what is mindfulness? So through me helping Casey begin to live more mindfully, he had that same reaction. He was like, Emma, I don't understand. Because when I listen to my thoughts, they're so fucked up and they're so like anxiety ridden. Like, I don't want to pay attention. And so this gets us into what we're going to be talking about next, which is why so many of us avoid being mindful and why mindfulness is so difficult to achieve. But once you get the hang of it and the rhythm of it, and next week, once we talk about these really important factors to keep in mind as you live mindfully, like Elizabeth said, you know, doing so without judgment, focusing on the choose again method, which we're going to talk about next week, you will be able to create that change out of love, but it is normal to feel overwhelmed. Number one, because we were not taught this. Like we weren't taught what mindfulness was growing up. And I can only imagine the impact that this is going to have on our future generation and on our children being raised mindfully, how much positive change they'll be able to create within themselves, therefore create within the world. But we weren't taught this. And it's not about blaming our parents because they weren't taught it either. They didn't know.
It's funny because a lot of the parents that I work with, since I'm a teacher and I work with children and I'm trying to really start this mindful mission and expose children to the whole concept of mindfulness at a very young age, so many of the parents just have this really jaded idea of mindfulness as perfection. Like once you're mindful, you're perfect. So you never lash out. You never get triggered. You're never mad. You're never yelling. Like you're never negative. And that's the opposite of mindfulness. Being mindful is being able to still have that really triggered, anxious, angry thought and not judge it. And that doesn't mean it erases all of the negativity from your life and you're suddenly this fucking beautiful unicorn that's only thinking positive thoughts. It's creating space for the positive and negative thoughts and welcoming them both with open arms.
Yes. I truly just think it's so amazing what Elizabeth is doing with her Sunshine Souls community and helping parents understand what mindfulness is and the power of mindfulness. Because I do agree. I think even when me and you first started healing and we were explaining to mom and dad like what we were doing and these principles, they were like, okay, so what? Like, life is hard, get a helmet. You know, like what good is it going to do to sit with that? Like, why would you think about the bad stuff? Like, what's that going to do? And I think Casey had that same perspective. He's someone who went through a lot of big T trauma in his early years. And I would say up until his early 20s, like big T trauma. And so he would be like, why the actual fuck would I sit down and think about all the bad things that I'm feeling? Like, there's too much. I don't want to do that. And so this brings us kind of into the second reason why so many of us avoid being mindful. And it's because we are scared and kind of unwilling to sit with the discomfort of our feelings. And so many of us choose instead to numb. We avoid feeling what we're feeling. So if, for example, we'll just shine a light on Casey. Casey lost his mom at a young age, and it was actually really traumatic for him, just how it all unfolded. And it's not my story to share. But if anything came up about Casey's mom, right, when we first started dating, we were 18, like, he never talked about it, never wanted to open up, never wanted to share stories about it, never really wanted to get into what happened or explain how it affected him. And he would always just say, like, why would I want to sit with that? Why would I want to feel those terrible things and those terrible feelings? And so people who have had tremendous trauma in their life, or people who just feel like they run anxious or they're dealing with depression or just they're in a state of fight or flight, they'll tend to numb instead of sitting in the ick, is what I say, or sitting with their feelings. So when a big feeling comes up, instead of being like, wow, I'm feeling anxious and I'm feeling it in my chest or I'm feeling it in my belly, right? As you are teaching these children to do, it's like, identify the feeling. Where is it living in the body? And me and you have both done this. So this is not throwing stones, but they'll avoid, they'll numb by having a glass of wine, smoking some weed, scrolling, doom scrolling, watching a TV show. They'll do anything to avoid sitting with themselves and with their feelings. And they're doing what we would call kind of like the opposite of mindfulness. They are actively choosing to distract themselves from the present moment because they're scared of what would happen if they sat with how they felt. And so one other thing I want to add under this little section here is how we were raised that way, right? To kind of like suppress our emotions and to be scared of them. I think most of us in our generation were like millennials, we're Gen Z. Our parents didn't know what to do with their own emotions. Therefore, they didn't really know what to do with our emotions. And so I think there were kids who, like me, were you sent to your room a lot when you had big feelings? Because I know I was.
I mean, I think our big feelings really represented differently. But for the most part, if we were, you know, screaming, crying, throwing a tantrum, making problems, it's like, just be alone.
Yeah, right? Like, you are having a tantrum as a child, you're feeling really big feelings in a little body. And most of us were sent to our room to be alone, or we were told to shut up and be quiet, or we were told that we shouldn't feel that way. And so then we begin to move through the world with this relationship to our emotions that's inherently negative. We think emotions are bad, when really emotions, it's energy in motion. It is just something that has been activated that wants to be released through the physical body. We have to feel it in the body. We can't just think about it. And I want to make a side note here. We'll definitely talk about this more. But I have a client of mine, and she knows this. We talk about it all the time. She's like addicted to talk therapy. You know, like she can talk about how she's feeling till tomorrow. Is that the saying? Mm-hmm. Like there's no tomorrow.
Till tomorrow. Yeah.
Like there's no tomorrow. So she can sit and be like, yeah, so this happened and it felt really hard. But she's like coming at it from that mental plane, not the physical plane. She's intellectualizing her feelings and she's rationalizing her feelings and she's trying to understand her feelings, which is an important part of the process, but she's not feeling it. And for those of you who are into the science, many, many neuroscientists, many people in the space talk about this. When you see an animal, call it a gazelle, get attacked in the wild and they live, right? They have a big scare, an animal, a tiger chases them, bites them or, you know, kills their young and then runs off. You will actually see that gazelle, that animal, freeze. And then like a minute or moments later, they will start compulsively shaking and then they'll get up and they'll run away. So their body is completing this cycle of feeling. Energy was put into motion through that experience. And so them shaking, like actually Elizabeth, before we recorded this, she went outside and did somatic shaking. Shaking helps our body to release energy, which is also why movement is a really powerful part of somatic practice, whether it's just dancing. We talk about twerking a lot. We'll get into that later on in the program. But all of this to say, emotions, it's energy in motion. And there are so many of us who have never fully completed the cycle of processing our emotions. And so much of it is stuck in the body. And so then the nervous system is on the fritz. And so we're stuck in fight or flight and we feel that weight in our chest, which contributes to more anxiety, to more avoiding, to more numbing. And it can really be a tough place to find yourself in.
It's staggering too how much this shows up in really young children. Many of my students were kind of written off as having ADD, ADHD. They were thrown an IEP and ended up having to be on like a yoga ball chair, which I personally would have loved to have a yoga ball chair growing up. That would have been a great way to continue to bounce and process and move and get things going. But I was, as many of us were, forced to sit still for 8 fucking hours straight, except for, you know, lunch, recess, whatever the fuck. Obviously, you're not sitting still that entire time. But that's the goal. And as a teacher, you're kind of told, keep them in that mold, keep them in that box. If you're acting out, if you're wiggling all over the place, if you're getting up, if you're tapping your foot, if you're making noise, if you're talking out of turn, you're wrong. So don't take up space. Don't share. Don't fucking move. Like, just stay there, be quiet, sit down, shut up. And So many kids now, they're being granted the opportunity to have a yoga ball chair or to have a standing desk and things like that. And it is so transformative for their learning experience because they're not just saying like, okay, this child has ADD, like they can't learn. It's no. They just learn differently. They need to process that movement in their body. And if they're feeling something during the day, I would way rather my child or my student bounce it out on a yoga ball chair than have to force it down and shove it down in the effort of taking up less space, which I think is why so many of us in our generation, we refuse to take up fucking space and we intellectualize our feelings because we're like, wow, yeah, that really hurt and that was really scary. And but I'm better now and things are good. And, you know, and we just like move the fuck past it because we're not used to taking up space and we've never had the permission to do so.
Yeah. I love that. And so under this little section right now, again, just to kind of recap, we're going through why so many of us resist being mindful. We talked about number one, how we were not taught mindfulness. And that really goes hand in hand with what Elizabeth was just explaining. Like even I never thought of it that way, but even in the academic setting, we were literally taught to sit on our hands, like stop moving, do not process anything. I don't care about what you're feeling at all right now. This is what you're supposed to do. This is your job. This is what it means to be a good student. This is what it means to be successful. Again, sacrificing and suffering equals success. That is also so apparent in the education system, but that's a whole nother. That's a whole nother conversation. But so number one is that we were not taught. Number two, I talked about how so many of us are unwilling to sit with the discomfort of our feelings. And so instead we choose to numb. And the reason I'm recapping is because there's one more thing I wanted to add under that little section. Just as a side note, there are many times in life where numbing and disassociating is what you have to do to survive. You know, when I think of Casey, sometimes he's like, oh, you know, I should have processed this before. I should have done the work to literally understand what happened to me at a young age. I should have already done this. And I'm like, no. When you were 14 and all of this stuff happened, you had to soldier on. What you did, your subconscious mind, your psyche, basically locking away those traumatic moments and memories is what allowed you to complete high school, get a D1 scholarship for college, show up, play, and become the person that you were meant to be. And now that you are in a safe environment, now that you have a sense of self, and now that you trust who you are, now you're capable of doing that work. So I did just want to add that in, because there are times in life where it's like disassociating is actually the best thing that you can do to survive. And it's part of our programming of our brain is to disassociate to protect ourselves. So yes, being mindful is so liberating and so important. But to anyone who has dealt with, you know, really traumatic things in their life, whether it's big, big T trauma or just lots of micro trauma, just come at it through this lens of I did the best I could with what I knew at the time. Because there is a lot of regret that comes up when people embark on this journey. I mean, for me and you both, I remember just thinking about our eating disorders and we were like, wow, like that was so fucked up. I can't believe we thought that way. I can't believe we did those things. I can't believe. And it's like, well, that was then. That was part of our journey. This is who we are now. This is on our path now for a reason. So what are we going to do with this awareness?
I also want to add in, if you are processing something that was incredibly traumatic or a series of small traumas in your life, a lot of very dense emotions can come up, especially if you did suppress and you kind of had to numb out at the time. Mm-hmm. So it's important to create a system of support for yourself, whether it be friends, family, a licensed professional, to help to guide you through this. Mindfulness is an extremely powerful tool. Journaling will definitely change your life, and self-reflection is so important. But having that support system to help carry you through will be what helps you succeed.
Yes. Amen. I love that. So, reasons why we avoid being mindful. Number one, we were not taught. Number two, we feel very unwilling and uncomfortable sitting with those big feelings and emotions. And then number three is we are unable to release judgment. Mm-hmm. And this is something that Elizabeth touched on, and you know, me talking about Casey. I mean, I can also talk about myself as well. Being mindful requires a release of judgment. Yep. It's accepting what you're thinking, what you're feeling, and doing so with love, with compassion, with grace. And so many of us are unable to let go of that judgment. And so when we start recognizing the way that we think about things, the way that we view things, maybe how we talk to ourselves, we will judge how we judge ourselves, right? We just like add negativity onto negativity. And that is what I struggled with the most this year. That is why I came back to the Real With Project and created the Real With Method, because I realized that all year, all of 2023, whenever I was mindful, I was noticing how dark my thoughts were, how hopeless I felt. And then I would judge myself, like, how can you feel that way? How can you think those things? You're Real With Emma. Like, you're supposed to be the one who doesn't think this way. You're supposed to have better perspective. You're supposed to feel good all the time. And so because I was judging my judgments and I was judging my negative thoughts, I began to avoid being mindful. That's when I found myself in autopilot. That's when I found myself just in like maintenance mode. I was just trying to get through the day. And I would feel so overwhelmed by how negative my mindset was that I just wouldn't even drop in. And so for a lot of people, this inability to release judgment comes from not feeling safe doing so, which ties us back to how we were taught to use fear as our fuel. Fear, judgment, shame, guilt, that was like our battery pack that allowed us to do the things that we needed to do in order to be successful. Fear is what made us eat healthy or work out or get to work on time or look a certain way or act a certain way. And so a lot of us fear that if we release judgment, we won't be motivated to do anything. And so that is a huge contributor into why a lot of people kind of choose not to drop in and be mindful, is because they are so reliant on that internal judgment and on that internal fear to get them to show up.
I'm really excited to talk about the power of thought next week. So definitely keep your eye out for that episode to come in, because we're going to be talking about so much of this important stuff. If you're not familiar with Joe Dispenza, we'll definitely be talking about a lot of his work, but we can become addicted to the feeling that we have of guilt or shame or judgment. And we get used to that loop when we have those feelings and we attach ourselves to those feelings instead of understanding, okay, I am the awareness of the thought. I am not the thought. And so being mindful, it can be very fucking scary because you realize how many negative thoughts you have. But that is your choice. That is the crossroads where you can either choose to identify with that and attach yourself to that story, or you can choose to be aware of it and choose again.
Yes, exactly. So the last thing, number four, reasons why we avoid being mindful is because we are scared of empowering the fear. And that's another thing that happens, I think, for a lot of us who are on a spiritual path, is there's all of this talk, because we're literally going to dive into it next week. What you think about is what becomes your reality. Like, your thoughts become your reality. And so for many of us, we're like, okay, I'm thinking and feeling negative things, so I don't want to drop in and be mindful of them, because I don't want to give life to something that I don't want. And so we will kind of avoid it. A lot of it's like also wrapped up in spiritual bypassing.
Yeah.
Right. So if we want to be high vibe, because we think being high vibe all the time is the key to living in alignment, being high vibe is the key to manifesting, we will then bypass negative thoughts, feelings, and emotions that come up and that arise because we're scared of sitting with the icky stuff and the fearful stuff, or the scarcity, or the lack, or the doubt, or the worry, because we don't want to make it true. And so we're going to talk more about that next week. I promise you, we're going to talk more about that next week. But the reason that I wanted to highlight these four major reasons why we avoid being mindful, or where mindfulness has not been something that has already been implemented into our lives, is so that you can begin this journey from a place of compassion, right? Because through all of those four things, the fact that we were not taught this, and especially as children, we were taught to suppress our emotions and that our emotions were a nuisance and that they were a bad thing, that we, you know, avoid being mindful because we don't want to sit with uncomfortable feelings, that we're afraid to release judgment, or we're unable to release judgment, and that we're scared of giving power to our fear. Those are all part of being a human. None of those are what I would call your fault. None of those were things that you chose for yourself consciously. Those were not things that we chose for ourselves. Those were not programs that we like selected when we chose to come in and be a human, of like, yeah, you know what? I would love to avoid my feelings. I would love to not be taught this. And so bringing all of this into perspective, it just gives you the ability to show yourself compassion, to say, okay, it's normal that I've struggled to be mindful up until this point, or it's normal that I had no idea what mindfulness was maybe until I listened to this episode. The reason why mindfulness is such a massive part of week one, as I said, is because mindfulness creates the opportunity to change. We cannot change what we don't know. And so as we've talked about a lot on this episode, it is hard for a lot of people. If you went from not being mindful at all to all of a sudden prioritizing being aware of your thoughts and your feelings throughout your entire day, you might feel overwhelmed. You might be maybe surprised or shocked at how negative your thoughts are, or how many things you're doing during your day that's out of fear. But the good news is, mindfulness is a practice, and you get better at it as time goes on. It really is like a muscle that you flex. And the more that you are mindful with acceptance and without judgment, the easier it becomes to drop in. We're going to talk way more about the actual tools the habits, the practices, and the principles of mindfulness and the inner work next week. But before we go, I want to kind of wrap up this whole entire topic of mindfulness by talking about some of the additional benefits other than what we've talked about thus far. So mindfulness also regulates our nervous system. It activates the parasympathetic because we're dropping into the present moment. And when we do that, when we are present with ourselves, as I've said before, it gives us opportunity. So maybe if we're feeling anxious, it gives us the opportunity to take a deep breath, to activate the vagus nerve, which we're going to talk a lot about inside this program. It can give you the opportunity to like unclench your jaw, relax your muscles, maybe get up and start shaking, doing some somatic release if you feel like you're a little bit ungrounded. And it just gives you the opportunity to treat your body with more care. Because as we've talked about, so many of us were taught to just autopilot steamroll through our day. We accept every thought as truth. We ignore how we're feeling because being successful means we suffer. So we are all used to feeling really disconnected, really untethered, feeling unworthy, and using fear as our motivator. Mindfulness has also been shown scientifically to improve brain health, our cognitive flexibility, our immune response, and has been shown to reduce stress, anxiety, pain, and depression. Now, on a more woo-woo note, mindfulness to me, one of the biggest benefits of mindfulness that I've seen in my own life and in the lives of my clients is that mindfulness creates opportunity for miracles. Mindfulness gives you the opportunity to receive downloads, to connect to and listen to your intuition, and to take aligned action. And so in the Real With Method and in the Real With Project for all my girls who went through it, you know that it's really important for someone like myself to have the science and the spiritual come together hand in hand to create long-lasting change and impact for me. It's not enough for someone to say, be mindful, it'll change your life. Because I'm going to sit there, being the classic Sagittarius that I am, I'm going to say, why? How? Show me the proof. Tell me how it works. So next week, again, we're going to be diving more into how it works, the neural network, the neural pathways, the choose again method, the principles, what the work looks like in your day-to-day life. But on that spiritual side, it is so important to recognize that yes, we're talking about the science. Yes, we're talking about the psyche and the subconscious and emotions and feelings and what we were taught as children. But if you want to find that true sense of freedom, if you really want to be living in alignment with your authentic self and your authentic truth, there has to be space for that spiritual side, for the divine, for a connection to something larger than you.
And I want to make it really, really clear too, when we become mindful, I think in the spirituality space, especially with TikTok and Instagram, there's all these little kitschy like life hacks, like these three tips to manifest your dream life immediately. Being mindful isn't that fast track to healing. It is step one. It requires practice, like Emma said, a consistent, dedicated practice. And it also takes the strength and the grit and the courage to approach those negative feelings with compassion as you begin to heal them. And I want to give a really tangible physical example that I've been experiencing recently. I've been going through a lot of really difficult changes in my personal life and my career and my relationship and my physical surroundings, et cetera, et cetera. And I have really been living on autopilot, or I had been for probably like 3 months straight, which is not sustainable, not healthy, wouldn't recommend to a friend. But once I really started to drop back into this mindfulness process and becoming mindful of my thoughts, there were some demons there. There was a lot that I needed to sift and sort through as I began to approach that healing process. And what I discovered was being mindful awakens you to the feelings and the emotions that might be there. But then you have to take action. You have to create space to take action. So you have to then listen to the cues that your body is giving you. So for example, I've had a lot of tension and tightness in my chest. I've had kind of a hard time breathing. And not in a, like, I just had COVID type of way, in a, I'm experiencing kind of a prolonged panic attack type of way. And so rather than write that off as like, okay, like, it'll be fine as long as I just keep listening to my thoughts and what, like, I have to create space to breathe, to meditate, to reflect, to write it out, to lean on my friends and family, to seek out help from therapists. Like, I have to go out of my way to take action. So mindfulness is the catalyst for change, but you have to follow up on that. You have to listen to those cues and make intentional time and space to invest in yourself, act upon those cues, and really experience the shift from there.
Yeah. I mean, you're like hitting the nail on the head and giving me the perfect segue into the last portion of today's episode. I was going to say today's call because that's always what I say with my clients, but I want to talk about mindfulness in action. What does it literally look like to be mindful? So I've broken down mindfulness in action into four categories. We have mindful consumption, mindful movement, mindful rest, and mindful reactions. So starting with mindful consumption, I actually have this kind of like split into two mini categories, from food to energy. Yes, food is energy, but for the sake of the conversation and the way that my brain works, I'm such a visual person. I like to break it down into food and then energy. So mindful consumption with food, we will talk way more about this in the week that we are breaking down food, fitness, sleep, self-care, all of that physical stuff, like the 3D physical plane stuff when it comes to healing and the healing journey. But just that you guys have some tangible tools that maybe you can start implementing this week. When it comes to consuming food, it's such a huge part of our human experience. And if you are listening to this, if you are part of the Real With Method, I want to say guarantee that you have had a relationship to food that has been tumultuous at some point or another, similar to Elizabeth and I, just being a young woman in the world that we live in. Food was always kind of spun to us in a light of food is bad. Food makes you fat. Here's how to not eat food. Here's how to not get fat. And so the way that we approach food is so incredibly important, not just from that like emotional, spiritual healing lens, but also from a scientific, metabolic, cellular lens. Being mindful when you are eating could look like setting an intention before you sit down to eat your meal, or setting an intention while you're cooking the meal of this food is going to nourish me, right? That's a more spiritual practice. You're infusing the food that you're going to eat with love and with, you know, nourishing energy, which is real and which is powerful. But during that, while you're setting the intention, you're basically signaling to your body through being present that you are in a safe environment, that it is safe to digest your food, to send the energy necessary to digest your food to your, you know, your intestines, your digestive tract. It's so important because when we are in a state of like fight or flight, our body is not concerned with digesting food. And so a lot of people who have a tumultuous relationship or a disordered relationship to food, they find themselves with poor digestion. And it's because they're approaching their meals with stress and with fear. So their body's like, all right, clearly we're not in a safe place. So if we are in danger, I don't give a fuck about digesting my avocado toast. I don't care. I'm going to be making sure that I have my alarm bells on in case immediate danger, you know, appears, or we're being chased by a tiger or what have you. So being present when you are eating food, we're going to again expand more on this in a few weeks, is so important for digestion. Another mindful practice for food consumption is just chewing your food. Saliva is literally liquid gold. And the more that you chew your food, the more information you are sending to your body for what you're digesting, so that the appropriate digestive enzymes can be released, and that everything that's meant to happen to properly digest your food can begin to unfold. There's a whole cascade of events that happens when we are chewing something, right? From the mouth all the way out the bottom. There's beauty and there's perfection in the process. But when we are coming from a place of fear and stress, our body will not perform that entire, I guess you could say, like symphony of events, the way that it's meant to.
Isn't it true that you're supposed to, or you're it's best to chew your food like 45 times per bite.
Yes. They
something
literally say
crazy
to,
like that.
To chew your food until it's like liquid in your mouth, until it's like soup.
I personally really struggle with this, so hopefully I'm speaking to anybody that resonates. I literally will take a, like, let's just say for some reason I'm imagining myself eating bow tie pasta with sprinkled Parmesan cheese on it, which I inhale. Like, I will literally put 3 bow tie pasta noodles in my mouth, chew it probably 2 or 3 times, and then it's down my throat, which is not good. And that was one of my, oh my God, it's like bringing me back. That was one of my comfort binge eating foods when I was a child. Like, if mom and dad were out for dinner and I was like cooking for myself, love and respect to you, mom and dad. But if I was cooking for myself, which happened a good amount, I would always make that, and I would make enough to feed like 5 people, and I would eat so fucking much of it, and I would chew each bite like twice. So just know you're not alone if you're not chewing your food.
Yeah, definitely not. I mean, I'm sitting here and I'm sharing that we need to be chewing our food. And even I, like last night, I was eating spaghetti, like quinoa, lentil spaghetti with red sauce. And I was noticing that I was like putting a bite in my mouth and going, chew, 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 swallow. Yeah. And being pregnant, I have, I don't want to say a weakened digestive system, but definitely a more finicky one, because all of my organs are literally being squished. So I don't have as much space in my body for food. I'm serious. So I notice that I get hungry really quick, because when I do eat, I can't eat as much. Like, I can't eat this massive meal. There literally isn't room for it in my body right now.
Wow.
And it's taking me a lot longer to digest my food. Think about all my internal organs are now doing their job around a growing womb. Like, everything's being compressed. Everything's in a different position than it's ever been.
Oh my God.
And so I get acid reflux. I'm dealing with heartburn. I'll eat something, and then hours later, like, I can still feel it sitting in my belly. And so making sure that I'm supporting my digestive system looks like being present while I'm eating, also limiting distractions. Like, there are times where the best thing for me is to, like, throw on a comfort show while I eat my dinner. But if you are like eating while you're standing, if you're eating while you're driving, working, if you're eating while you're trying to multitask, you're asking your body to do so many things at once. It's not going to be prioritizing your digestion, because digestion is not key to survival. Mm-hmm. It just isn't. Like, your body doesn't actually care that much about digesting your food. It's always going to send free or available energy to things that are necessary for survival. And so this is why perceived stress, we'll talk way more about this moving forward. I feel like that's just going to be like such a buzz phrase for me. But perceived stress is super important, because if you're constantly telling your body that you are stressed, or if you're constantly perceiving your world, your life as stressful, our body doesn't know the difference between, oh, I'm stressed because I have an email that I should have sent out yesterday, or, oh, I'm stressed because I have a wild animal chasing me. Stress is stress to the body, and stress equals danger to the body. So this is why presence and mindfulness with food consumption is important. So mindful consumption part 2 is energy. What are you consuming energetically? This is social media. It's music, TV, podcasts, anything of that realm. But it's also the energy of the people that you surround yourself with. So being mindful when you consume energy, that might look like creating some boundaries, recognizing, tapping in, tuning in, and being like, you know what? When I hang out with this person, I don't really feel good afterwards. Or when I consume content from this one account, it doesn't really make me feel good or empowered. It actually is triggering me to feel fear or to compare myself. So mindfulness, again, is being aware. It's tapping in and tuning in. And so being willing, being, I guess you could say, courageous enough to be aware of how people and things make you feel is really important during this journey. And I like to pick on Casey a lot, because I just love his journey and how I've seen him grow. And even with you, Elizabeth, I've seen it. There are so many of us who have people in our lives. We have friends, we have friendships that we just like baseline accept. We're like, oh yeah, like that's my friend. But we aren't willing to be like, but why are they my friend? Like, yeah. What are they doing for me? How is their energy nourishing me? Is it even nourishing me, or is it depleting me? And so when Casey became mindful, he actually had a lot of friendships begin to fall away. And a lot of things in his life started to unfold differently because he was like, oh my God, why was I letting this person have so much access to me? Or why was I giving this person so much of my time and my energy? Like, they don't even make me feel good. And now that I think about it, they don't even show up for me the way that I show up for them. So it can be really illuminating when you focus on mindful consumption from that energy standpoint in relationships.
I remember when I first started on this spiritual path and TikTok started to blow up and spiritual talk and all of the things. And everybody was talking about one of the major symptoms of awakening is losing friends. And so you might think, oh my God, well, I could never end that friendship. I've known them since diapers. You know, I'm not, I don't have the permission or the flexibility to just cut them off. And to a certain extent, power to you if you want to maintain that. But setting an energetic boundary and being clear with yourself every time that you see that person, like, I'm not going to overgive. I'm not going to overtake. So taking on people's energy, taking on people's stress and problems, always trying to be the advice giver, always trying to be wise and helping and supporting, like, to a certain extent, you just have to put your foot down. And that doesn't mean cut them off. That doesn't mean remove them from your life entirely, but be super clear with how that's going to unfold before you see them, before you engage with them, and really just protect the energy that you're absorbing.
Yeah, I love that. And so just to wrap up this first little piece of mindfulness in action when it comes to mindful consumption, when we are talking about this energy, is just remember that music, podcasts, a lot of the things that we are listening to and we don't think it's impacting us, actually really heavily is impacting us. So the lyrics in music or the underlying frequency in a lot of the modern day music that is being streamed on, you know, Spotify and Apple Music, it's actually really not great for our subconscious mind because we've said it before, I think even on this episode, this is where like, I'm like, oh my God, we're over an hour in. I'm like, what have I said? What haven't I said? I think I've said this, words cast spells, right? And so what we say holds a lot of weight. And so there are a lot of songs that have lyrics that are self-deprecating or they're not reinforcing something positive. And we will just have that song on a loop in our head and we'll listen to it and we'll sing it. And it's like, what are we signaling to ourselves, to our brains, to our bodies, and to the universe by listening to this low vibrational music? So I know for a lot of people, it's really hard to create that separation, but you have to start to hold yourself with such care that you're like, why would I have this song in its message program into my subconscious brain? Like, I don't want that. So I'm going to create a boundary here.
And I think also creating space to explore new genres, that was a huge piece of my awakening. And there are some playlists and some artists that I specifically resonate with as like the beginning of my awakening. I started to move a lot away from like the US, you know, top 50 charts and from hip hop and rap and all of the really, really popular music that everybody was listening to. It was at the parties, it was at the bars, it was everywhere you went. It's in the coffee shops. You can't go somewhere without somebody playing one of these fucking songs. And I started to really resonate with a lot of more instrumental music. And I'm not talking like classical fucking piano, but just guitars, humming, drums, like things that are really soothing. And I connected with them on a soul level without having to hear a word. Just open up your horizons and begin to explore new genres because you really never know what you're going to find.
Yeah, I love that. Actually, when I got my Spotify Wrapped for this year, it was so funny because like the number one person that I listened to was, I'm going to pull up Spotify real quick. I want to make sure that I'm saying his name. Ludovico. I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but it's basically like classical music. And that's what I listen to when I'm working to like help drop in. And it like helps to activate certain parts of my brain. But like my most played was this like classical music or this music that's instrumental and that actually helps me get into brainwaves for concentration. And we'll talk more about all that fun stuff as we move forward. But I want to get through this mindfulness in action for you guys. So that second piece of mindfulness in action is mindful movement. And I'm not even going to elaborate too much on this because We are going to talk so much about mindful movement during the week where we talk about movement. And for women especially, mindful movement is a huge, huge, huge piece of our hormone balance. We're going to be talking about cycle syncing. So you can look forward to that in the coming weeks of the Real With Method. And there will also be so many amazing resources available to you in the Real With Method alignment guidebook. But just for anyone who's listening, mindful movement is basically this understanding of your body has a consciousness. Your body knows what it needs. And so there are so many of us who live in the fitness world where we're seeing programs. It's like you need to do 3 sets of 15 reps this many times, 3 days a week for 4 months in order to see results. And there is scientific proof behind those modalities and those approaches to fitness. Yes. But I think that understanding the way that our body works energetically, and especially for women, how we change week to week throughout our menstrual cycle, if we are trying to achieve a specific body goal, yes, sure. Go, you know, dive into one of those programs. I've done many of them in my life, but there's actually this internal dialogue or this internal wisdom in your body that can let you know what type of movement is best going to support it that day. So for just an example, I know that there are so many times for me, I'm a very visual person where I would wake up and I would ask my body, what would feel best for you today? And I would almost like get this like download, this visual of me doing something. Some days it would look like me doing a quick high intensity workout. I just really want to sweat and feel strong and I want to do it in 20 minutes. While other days I would see myself stretching or going for a walk or doing yoga, going to a yoga studio or doing an at-home Pilates class. And I had all these options available to me, all these different forms of movement. And when I would ask my body, it would respond. We will talk about this moving forward, how our intuition is a muscle. And if you've never given your body the opportunity to speak to you, it might be quiet. It might be speaking in such a whisper that you don't really know what it's telling you. Do not give up. It is there. The body consciousness, the body wisdom is there. It might just be that you have so much programming overshadowing that wisdom in the body that you're not able to hear it quite yet. So if you are a woman, cycle syncing is going to be a great way to start to lean into that body's wisdom. If you are someone who does not menstruate, it's just about giving yourself the opportunity to try new things first, introduce your body to new forms of movement. And then from there, you'll begin to maybe gain a little bit more access to what your body needs on a day-to-day basis.
Let's also bring into the equation that if you've been on one of these really intense workout regimens for a long time and you've been rocking out with that, it could be, you know, scary, or you might judge yourself or feel lazy or whatever for taking it easy or taking it slow. But I remember when I first transitioned out of that really intense lifestyle and began to adopt this more mindful and slow lifestyle, I saw insane results, but the more I started to listen to my body's intuitive cues for rest or for slow movement, the more my body would speak to me. When my body used to ask for rest and I would be like, shut the fuck up, I'm going to go do a HIIT workout, my body didn't do that as much because it knew that I wasn't going to listen. So the more that you listen, the more your body will speak, but just give yourself the grace to listen to that easily, give yourself compassion, and just kind of go with the flow.
Yeah. Again, there's going to be so much more. It's like I always get so ahead of myself on week one, no matter what I'm doing, because it's like we're trying to do an intro. We're trying to create a natural progression of information. But sometimes I want to just like dive right in. And like right now, now that we're talking about it, let's talk about body trust and body consciousness and mindful movement and all of that stuff. But
yeah,
there is more time to explore that. So mindfulness in action number 3. Mindful rest. Liz was kind of just talking about this. I don't know if you're intuitively just like feeling into where we're going, but you're creating such amazing segues. In the guidebook for the Real With Method, we are going to be putting in the 7 types of rest and the examples of what that looks like. So I'm not going to dive too deep in on this episode. And we will also be linking the TED Talk that's really powerful that talks about the 7 different types of rest. because I think we were all born and raised where like rest means you lay on the couch.
Yeah.
Rest means you lay down. And for so many of us, I would say specifically women, we really struggle to rest. We struggle to rest in that one exact way. Not many of us actually find laying down to be restful, because the feminine energy, when it's at rest, is when it speaks the loudest. Mm. And when the feminine energy is doing, so painting, drawing, walking, driving, you know, journaling, when the feminine is expressing itself, that's actually when our brain quiets down, is when we're in that expressive state. And so laying down on the couch for women is typically when we start hearing our brain rattle off our to-do list, and we're thinking about the things that we need to get done and the laundry, and there's dishes in the sink, and I need to do this. And oh my God, I forgot to pick up the dry cleaning. And so laying down on the couch for a woman is sometimes the least restful thing, because that actually amps up this consciousness and this awareness. And we actually like shift more into that like masculine, logical, doing what has to get done energy. So let's just break it down really quick. The seven types of rest: there's physical, mental, sensory, creative, social, emotional, and spiritual. So again, in your guidebook, you can go look and see examples of all of those different kinds of rest. But basically, just going off of what I was previously sharing, for men, it tends to be the opposite. They rest when they rest. Like when Casey needs to rest, he needs to lay down. And when you are a man, if you're in a relationship with a man and they're laying on the couch and you're sitting there and your brain's going a mile a minute and you look at them and you're like, what are you thinking? They can literally turn to you and say nothing. And you're like, how? I'm thinking about the trip that we never booked and what we're going to do next week. And so for men, laying down, doing nothing, meditating in solitude is one of the most restful things for the masculine. Whereas for feminine, we're actually going to find more rejuvenating, replenishing rest from those other types of rest, whether it's the spiritual, the emotional, the social, the sensory, the mental, versus just like the physical rest. Because there are so many people who are like, oh, I'm so overworked, I'm so stressed out. You do this. You're like, I just need to like lay down. And you lay down. And then by the time you get up, you're like, well, great. Now I'm just an hour behind.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. It's literally the worst.
Yeah. You don't actually feel rested at all, because you're either feeling guilty that you're laying down, or the whole time that you're laying down, you're thinking about things that need to get done. So it's not actually rejuvenating, replenishing, restoring, filling your cup up. So it's very important to be mindful with how we choose to rest. For example, I just took a week off of social media. That was so restful for me. It was restful in a creative sense, in a social sense, in a sensory sense, in an emotional sense. Like, I got so much from taking a week off of social media. And what was crazy is I actually physically did more last week than I have in months. Granted, I'm pregnant, but by removing social media, it gave me the physical ability to do more, because I had more energy to use towards physical tasks. So sometimes mindful rest is more of a balance of like giving and taking, where you're putting energy, how you're filling your cup up. And it's not always to say, oh, I'm tired, I should do nothing. It's like, okay, why am I tired? What's depleting me? What could I use more of? So there's a lot more to this conversation. And so much of what we're going to be talking about throughout the Real With Method will be illuminating how we can best support ourselves in all of these different areas, whether it's spiritually, emotionally, physically, socially, et cetera. Now, the last piece of this mindfulness in action that we're going to touch on is mindful reactions. It's so important that as we begin to embody this mindful lifestyle, that we are not just aware of what we're thinking and what we're feeling on the inside, but we also begin to be mindful about the output. How are we reacting to things? How are we showing up in our relationships? What are we saying? Are we finding that we're actually really reactive people, or we're really defensive? So mindful reactions can look like, how are we interacting with people in our lives, whether it's our partner or our boss or our coworkers? but it's also, how are you reacting to the things that happen in your life? How are you reacting to sitting in traffic? How are you reacting to forgetting an item when you're at self-checkout and having to like run back through the grocery store? Are you like, are you cursing yourself the whole time? Are you like, I'm so fucking stupid. Like, oh my God, how I literally came to the store for milk. How the fuck did I forget the milk? You know, like,
yeah,
it's being mindful about how you are reacting to the things that are just part of the human experience. Like, you're going to sit in traffic. You're going to forget something at the store. You're going to run late for a meeting. You're going to forget to do X, Y, and Z. You're going to forget to set the timer for the cookies and they're going to burn, you know, once in a blue moon. That's like my sister's favorite thing to do is forget
to set
timers.
Me.
But this is just the reason why we're talking about mindfulness and action is to give you a little bit more to go on as you begin to move through your day being mindful. It's not just like, oh, what am I thinking? What am I feeling? It's this overall sense of awareness that your choices, behaviors, perspectives, beliefs, they all shape your reality. It all shapes how your day unfolds, which is how your weeks unfold, which is how your months and your years unfold. And then it becomes your life. How is your life unfolding? So it all starts with mindfulness. And that's why we wanted to talk about this during week one. So before I get to our closing little segment, is there anything you want to add, Liz?
Yeah, I think just going back to that original point we spoke about with living in alignment and who are you aligning with? Like, what version of yourself would you consider is in alignment? And I remember a big quote from Gabby Bernstein that I love is being able to achieve that and being able to achieve progress and positive change is the culmination of a bunch of tiny right actions or little right actions. It's not one big grand sweeping thing that you're like, perfect, I'm aligned, everything's good. It's tiny little actions every single day that build that aligning with that version of yourself. So how are you overextending yourself? How are you over-explaining, over-justifying, over-defending? Like, would that version of yourself, that most aligned version of yourself, be over-explaining and overextending themselves, or would they be kind of just like chilling in their peace and grounded in their own essence?
Yeah. I mean, my favorite thing to say is it's the smallest choices we make that create the biggest change. It's
yes.
Every minute of every moment of every day, we have the ability to choose love. And yes. We're really going to be driving that point home next week when we talk about the Choose Again method, which is from Gabby Bernstein. That changed my life when I read it in one of her books, I think back in 2019, there is so much more to come. But to end week one, I just want to give you the mantra. You are worth the work. If you listen to this episode and you're like, oh my fucking God, I haven't been mindful. I used to be, or I've never been mindful. And even just listening to this, I'm starting to think about how I think. And oh my God, like this feels so hard. This feels so daunting. How will I ever break free from these negative thought patterns and these negative beliefs? And maybe you realize you're a very reactive person or just your perspective tends to be rooted in fear. I just want you to know that you are worth the work. And one of the things that has really shaped how I show up for myself is this belief that you can choose your hard, because suffering and living out of lack and using guilt and shame to fuel you and using fear as your battery pack and constantly feeling like you're not good enough and constantly competing and comparing and striving and chasing and needing, that's hard. So is the work. So is choosing better thoughts and showing up for your journaling practice and moving through this guidebook and carving out the time to listen to these episodes for the next 8 weeks. That's also hard, but choose your hard. Choose it. And I think that this is something that has really propelled my own journey, because I think maybe what happened to me within the last year is that I was resisting the hard. I was like, oh my God, I'm really, really feeling like I'm back in a negative headspace. And it feels too fucking hard to do all of this inner work all over again. So I'm just not going to do it. Kind of forgetting that if I wasn't choosing the hard, as in the showing up for myself hard, I was just going to be given a different kind of hard.
Yeah.
I was just going to be given the suffering and the feeling disconnected and the lack of inspiration, the lack of motivation, the lack of purpose the lack of self-worth, that was also hard. But I wasn't really sitting with that. I was just like, oh, the inner work feels too hard. I'm not going to do it. All like, meanwhile, the whole time, all of these other hard things were dropping in and popping up, and I was just trying to ignore them. And eventually it caught up with me. And I think it's really important to just recognize that for so many of us, if you feel like you are someone who has been on a spiritual path, my acupuncturist actually said this to me. We love Pam. She was like, when you first have a spiritual awakening, you are just riding this like euphoric high because you see how magical it is when you invest in yourself and you show up for yourself. So you have these bad mindsets or bad days or bad feelings, and then you start to change and shift and heal. And that feels so good that that momentum carries you to the next bad day or to the next low point or the next dark night of the soul or the next challenge or the next test. And so I feel like that was true for like 3 or 4 years. I was just like, I've got this. I know how to heal. I'm not afraid of my shadows. I'm not afraid of anything. I'll dive deep. I'll go in head first. I don't give a fuck. Choose your heart. I choose myself every day. And then it just wasn't as easy. It wasn't as easy to choose the work. It felt really daunting. And she was telling me, she was like, you feeling like you were in a rut for a whole year, she was like, that's going to be more impactful and powerful for you than those first few years of you just like, you know, she was like, you rode your first wave. Those first 3 or 4 years, that was like your first big wave of like spirituality. Mm-hmm. Like you were riding it and, you know, there were lulls and peaks and dips and drops. She's like, but you having to sit in calm waters with yourself, you having to like be with yourself, that is a true testament to your spirituality. That's a true testament to your growth is, you were in a rut for a year, but you found your way. You found your way back. So for anyone else who maybe feels like they can resonate with, oh, it used to be easier. I used to do this like it was no big deal. I could like do shadow work like it was no problem. I had no fear around my fear, to all of a sudden maybe the fear of your fear grew really big. It's not that you were wrong. It's not about blaming yourself. It's not about regret. It's about accepting that this was part of your journey and part of your path. And I really resisted that this year. I was really disappointed in myself for a lot of what I went through this year and how I felt this year. But I see now how I can turn that pain into poetry. And it's through this. It's through the Real With Method, because I had no interest in talking about mindfulness all year long until I had my own mini awakening of like, wow, I'm not okay. Like I'm okay, but I'm not fine. I think that that's, I posted that on my Instagram at some point. I was like, I've been okay, but I have not been fine. Like not at all. So with that being said, is there anything you want to add, Liz? Because we're going to start to wrap this up. I know that this was a longer one. I'm sure they'll all be equally as long because there's always so much to say and to share. But in terms of like, you're worth the work, anything from your own journey this year that you want to to share with the community?
I, number one, can't emphasize enough how much I've personally learned in this episode. And no matter how many of these things that I've already heard before, hearing it again just solidifies how important it is for me to dive back into this work. And like I said, I've already been experiencing some personal challenges, but I would say the last couple of years have been just kind of a series of challenges and triumphs and challenges and triumphs. And I just am reminded of how important it is to dive back into myself, to invest in myself, and how worthy I am of working on myself. And so for any of you who are listening to this and you're like, holy motherfucking shit, I have a really long to-do list of things that I need to heal. I have a really long list of negative thoughts that I'm battling. It's okay. Just take it thought by thought, day by day, month by month. And we are here with you. I am here with you. You are fucking worth the work. And I'm so excited to be on this journey with you.
I could not have said it better myself. To everyone who's listening, we are so grateful that you are here and you are on this journey with us. One last call to action is to go and check the Real With Method Alignment Guidebook. There are a few assignments for week one, again, just to help you do the integration and embodiment work so that all of this information isn't just going in one ear and out the other. Yeah. So you can actually do some deep reflection, bring the physical into the equation, because that is ultimately how we create true and long-lasting change. So thank you guys for joining us. I'm so happy that we have officially wrapped up week one, and we will see you next time.